From KUAR News in Little Rock, I'm Jacob Kaufman. Congressman French Hill joins us on this occasion to have a conversation about what to do about this nation's problem with mass shootings. He represents much of central Arkansas in the U.S. House. Congressman Hill, thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks, Jacob.
This is a wide-ranging problem from schools to movie theaters to neighborhoods and homes. And so far, it's proven to be a pretty insurmountable challenge for this nation and for Congress. America, as you know, routinely ranks among the most gun-friendly of industrialized nations and also yields among the most violent outcomes of gun ownership, whether it be domestic things or situations like in Parkland High School in Florida. What are your words for this, Representative Hill? Is there a problem with gun violence and gun culture in America?
Well, Jacob, thanks for having me. And we have a wide range of, as you know, gun laws across the country. Our cities with the highest murder rate, for example, have the toughest gun ordinances in the nation. And so from jurisdictions with very strict gun handling and gun ownership rules to the nation as a whole, clearly we have an issue, you know, with violence in the U.S. and how that's manifested with either firearms or some other weapon. And for me, that's why the number one objective should be to keep guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them and are not permitted under law to have them. People under 18, people under 21 for handguns, felons, people convicted of domestic violence. That's been a law for 20 years on the books. People who are mentally ill, people dishonorably discharged from the military. But there are gaps in our background check system, and I think that's one reason why the Congress in the last few days passed improvements to the background check system to offer grant money for agencies and for states to improve their input to the background check system, to improve penalties for federal entities like the U.S. Military who don't put names in it accurately. So first, we got to keep guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them. And one of our major defenses there, obviously, is the background check system.
I'm glad you brought up that recent action by Congress. I want to address two other things regarding your voting record in the past. One, I want you to talk about the SHARE Act a little bit. Some critics say it made it easier for people to buy silencers and armor-piercing bullets and that that's not really the direction we should be going.
Well, the SHARE Act is a conservation bill that was supported by the Sportsman's Caucus bipartisan group of people in the Congress. It does not have anything to do with the term silencers. There is a repressor portion of that bill, which reduces the noise just 30% of a firearm on a rifle. But it is not a silencer. That's a complete misnomer. That bill worked its way through the committee process and had bipartisan support, as I say, as a part of a major conservation group of bills that it was packaged with.
One other item, and then we'll kind of go back to the big picture. NPR's Scott Horsley reported that after President Trump came to office, you supported a move that stopped the Social Security Administration from reporting people with severe mental disabilities and those unable to care for themselves to an FBI database related to gun ownership. Is that a fair characterization, or why did you support that?
No, I don't think that's a fair characterization. There was a measure in Congress that said that if you have a financial guardianship, that you were then prohibited from acquiring a weapon. That's not a prohibited cause under the federal statute. And just because somebody's older and no longer takes care of their financial affairs under a Social Security-type guardianship, it doesn't mean they can't go deer hunting on the weekend. So I think that's, again, something that's a mischaracterization of the facts and the situation.
Sure, and I appreciate you on here to offer your perspective on what those votes are. So I wanted to address, the massive nationwide protest. USA Today called the one in D.C. the largest single-day protest in the history of the Capitol. Of course, Little Rock had some students demonstrate as well. Some students in Greenbrier were literally paddled because they believe in corporal punishment in that district for their belief in those demonstrations. What do you think the message was from those demonstrators to you, to Congress, and why didn't you participate in that?
Well, I was not in a city when there was one of these items, but I do support the students being politically active and making their voices known. I think the overwhelming issue from the students that I've spoken with, both in Washington as well as locally, is why can we protect our homes, our offices, our airports, but we can't seem to protect our schools? And so I understand the need for school safety. I've got a teenage son who was very shaken by the events in Florida, and I've had a daughter on a campus with two murders in the last couple of years, using a knife in that instance. But nonetheless, school safety is a critical element. And so I support a nationwide discussion about how to do that. And I appreciate Governor Hutchison with Dr. Cheryl May convening a group to talk about how do we improve school safety. And of course, President Trump has done that as well. He has a school safety group bringing in people from across the country to talk about how we should do that better. We've got 19 campuses here in the state that have for many years, long before recent days and recent tragedies, had a very active school shield, school security program. And I think
Right.
that's best left up to local superintendents and local boards as to what fits and works and is best for their community.
One of the messages from them that was pretty universal in all the different rallies, certainly not held by everybody there, though, was that the NRA, the National Rifle Association, plays a toxic role in this entire conversation. Do you think the NRA plays a constructive or destructive role in this dialogue?
Well, first, I mean, I think they speak out for the individual right to bear arms and the Second Amendment. And I think they also are engaged in that as a political voice, but they're also involved in safe shooting sports and best practices and gun safety across the country and have been for tens and tens of years.
Right.
So I think from the point of view of the public, they've been tried to be a constructive voice. After previous school catastrophes, they've put up efforts to improve school safety and come up with best practices and try to share that across the country. So I don't think they're immune to the horrible tragedies that we have faced in our society from recent years. I just argue that we have a societal problem across our country. We have a mental health problem across our country. We have a lack of behavioral health access in our schools across our country. And that these are fundamental challenges. When you look at mass shootings, either school related or not, you find consistently mental health and lack of treatment as a major issue. And that's why I was pleased that Congress again approved $2 billion for our states to improve access to mental health, and why I was proud to vote for the first comprehensive federal mental health bill in 35 years before the Congress that we passed in 2016. Because in our schools, in our jails, in our homeless shelters, and across our society, we have people who need, desperately need medication and behavioral health treatment.
Real quick on the NRA, and I partially brought this up, and you've explained this before, particularly in Talk Business and Politics with Roby Brock, that back in one of your campaigns when you ran against Democrat Pat Hayes, he claimed that the NRA backed him, a Democrat at the time. The NRA said, no, we back French Hill, and they spent over $1 million in independent expenditures, independent of your campaign. Part of the reason, I don't think too many people object to, you know, shooting safety training courses and that sort of thing from the NRA, but a lot of the objection is over the alleged influence over politicians. Is there anything constructively you would want the NRA to do differently? Do you hear any of those students' complaints, and do you think any of those are legitimate about what the NRA's message is to society?
Well, thanks for raising that, Jacob. Number one, I represent the people of the 2nd Congressional District, not the NRA. The NRA, just for the record, has given $3,000 to my campaigns over the past 3 years. I don't have anything really to be engaged with except to say that. And you described the situation back in 2014 perfectly. But it's just a misnomer to say that the NRA gave, you know, $1 million to my campaign, which is repeated in media sources. That is inaccurate.
But you certainly welcome that involvement, I guess. Or do you wish they would stay out of the election?
Well, no. In the last weeks of the campaign, Pat Hayes ran a misleading ad, and they set the record straight. And that's right. And so... But I just argue the way it's phrased, it's as if they gave direct money to my campaign, and I think that's misleading to people. They can get the record at fec.gov, and that money would have not even come into the campaign had Mr. Hayes not misrepresented that he was, quote, endorsed by the NRA as the Democratic candidate. So I think that's in the past. And I do believe that the NRA should be a constructive voice for, the appropriate protections of the Second Amendment, sure, but also best practices on how we cure many of these societal challenges that are endemic to American society and where violence is an outcome. And I think, again, as I've argued, mental health treatment is absolutely fundamental and critical to that, and school safety programs are critical and important to that.
We've only got a couple minutes left running against the clock. I appreciate this interview. I'll just go through a few things, I guess, as quickly as we can. I'll try to phrase them in a way that makes sense for that style, at least. Should there be background checks on all gun purchases? It's not the case for every single type of gun purchase right now.
Well, I think obviously federal law says that anybody who's engaged in the business of dealing in firearms has to be licensed and approved by the federal government. And when you start to bring in private sales, say between family members or relatives, you're not required to have a federal license. And that's where you're referencing in this gap. I think, people ought to be able to buy and sell guns without over-regulation in that kind of an environment. But I think states should make specific rules around gun sales and things of that nature as they see fit. I just encourage listeners to really make sure they understand what all the laws are on prohibition of gun ownership now as they're researching what kinds of improvements we might consider at the state or at the federal level.
Should there be any new age restrictions on any type of firearm available for public purchase?
Well, federal law now is 18 for a rifle and 21 for a handgun. We send our young people to war at 18. They can vote at 18. They can drink at 18. So I
Not so
think that we
fast.
need
We
to.
can drink at 21. Smoke at 18, I think.
Well, I guess, yeah, it depends on changing. Yeah, good point. Changing different rules, states. But my view on that is if states want to try to change that, that's good. I'm comfortable at 18 at the federal law. I believe that, again, this is about training, responsibility, and all the work we need to do in society and not simply an age-related issue. There are millions and millions of people who are law-abiding, 18-year-olds who are not mass murderers. And I think we should focus on the causes and implications there.
The issue of bump stocks is popular. You've said you've supported the ATF researching the potential ban on this. Why do you think ATF should be doing this instead of Congress?
Well, I believe Judge Sessions, the current Attorney General of the United States, has said he supports treating that item regulatorily as essentially emulating an automatic weapon. And as you know, automatic weapons are prohibited under the federal firearm statutes. And that's why I think ATF was the right place to start. He apparently agrees with that and is working to implement that. I'm not sure why the Obama administration approved the use of bump stocks during their time in office, but something that emulates an automatic weapon, which in fact is prohibited under federal law, I support it being regulated by the ATF.
Should there be any type of new limits on types of weapons as opposed to a modification to a weapon?
Well, I don't. We prohibit automatic weapons, and I support that prohibition. Again, I think there are a lot of law-abiding Americans who have shooting sports as a major hobby, and I'm not sure we should any further encumber them beyond what laws that we have now. But I'm also interested in hearing the debates in Congress, listening to my colleagues, and seeing what state and localities are doing.
The Centers for Disease Control is no longer funded to research the impact of guns on public health and safety. Former Arkansas Republican Jay Dickey ushered in this ban on public research, but regretted it before his death. What's your position? What can Congress do about this?
Well, I don't think technically from looking back at the history of that it actually did block that research. That's what the
But there's no
CDC
funding
ended up
for it
doing.
now. The Congress is not funding it anymore.
Well, Congress has certainly clarified that just last week when they said that the CDC can conduct research on gun violence. It's just not to use their offices at the CDC to advocate and promote gun rules of some kind. But they can conduct research on gun violence, and that was not only reasserted by the Health and Human Services Secretary recently, but it was also reasserted in the appropriations bill signed into law last week.
Well, I just want to reiterate for listeners, though, that Republican Jay Dickey, the congressman who bears the name the Dickey Amendment, his opinion was that his legislation helped block CDC research and funding into gun-related issues and public health.
And I just want to reiterate for you and the listeners that the Secretary of HHS says that they can research.
Very recent clarification.
And, well, but I don't know that this, I've never heard of this issue until recently, personally.
Oh, okay.
I think a lot of Americans have never heard of this issue until recently. And so it was clarified by the not only the HHS secretary, but by the Congress last week in the appropriations bill, saying that the CDC most certainly may research gun violence.
And let's close the interview here. Do you expect any realistic change in the number of mass shootings in the remainder of your term or the next one should you win in November?
Well, Jacob, I have as my fervent hope from a public policy point of view that we can continue to expand what we did in our 2016 mental health bill to get dollars out in our states and cities to make sure that people who need mental health treatment are receiving it. And secondly, that we can get mentally ill people who are clearly under treatment and should be in the background check system as prohibited from being able to acquire a firearm, that we get that moving in a better direction. We have the money for the mental health. We have the strategies in the states to improve their mental health and behavioral health treatment. We have recognition around the country that this is a critical issue. We've got grant money to help states improve their background check systems. And some states are taking a page from the domestic violence approach and having gun violence restraining orders considered in their states, which protect Fourth Amendment privacy issues and due process issues, but at the same time can have those people who are deemed a danger to themselves or others put in that background check system and prohibited from acquiring firearms and having their firearms potentially custodial on their behalf for their treatment.
I've been speaking with U.S. Representative French Hill, the congressional representative for Central Arkansas's 2nd District. Thanks a lot. This has been a pretty good conversation. It's been a pretty good length of time. I think our listeners will really appreciate us getting down into all these issues. It's a good conversation.
Thanks, Jacob. Thanks for the invitation.
From KUAR News in Little Rock, I'm Jacob Kaufman.